Hello, hello, hello. Lynn Pingle here, CEO of Mackie Company and your host for the Procurement Games podcast and Open Conversations. It is Thursday noon hour. I can't hear myself. What is going on?
Huh? You're turning me up, not yourself. Now you're turning me off. I can't even hear myself.
Yeah, I don't know.
You're two. I'm one.
Did I just blow you up? Yeah. I just blew your ear up. Yeah. All right, let's start over, shall we?
I'm messing with a microphone over here, like trying to fit. Oh, she's messing with my earphone. That's what she's doing.
This is why you're a tech person. We are live, obviously, and broadcasting our show this Thursday noon hour in this lovely
Murphy hour.
Yeah, it is.
What can go wrong?
Yeah.
Will go wrong?
Yeah, hopefully not, especially with the topic that we're talking about today. All right. We are live at WFNU 94.1 Frogtown Community Radio. So our show is about providing a platform for small businesses to showcase their expertise, share their stories, lessons learned, and more importantly, discussing the challenges they face in procurement and as a small business. Folks, there are those in our small business ecosystem to talk a lot about change, but there are others who actually know the how. That's a confusing one. Know the how to make things happen. Our guest today is one I definitely consider another mover and shaker in the ecosystem. Okay, so before I get going here, I have to do a shout out to all of our Minnesota listeners and those across the great United States who have tuned in every Thursday at noon and every Tuesday at 10 a.m. to learn about the entrepreneur ecosystem. Jared, we hit 100,000 downloads.
100K?
Yesterday.
Wow.
Isn't that cool?
Congratulations. Yeah. I wish I had an applause button here. Oh, there you go. We didn't need an audio track in order to do
all
that.
All right. But I know. 100,000. Can you believe it? It's not even the end of the season, folks. Somebody's listening out there. A lot of people are listening out there. So let me hand it over to you since we've been talking and we didn't really talk about you.
Well, my name is Jared. My last name is Peterson. I am the executive director over at Our Tech Cooperative, where we're helping small and disadvantaged businesses.
Did you just do a my name is Charlie, last name Wilson? Can I have you just sing that if you're going to do a my name is Jared, last name Peterson?
My name is Jared, last name Peterson.
Okay, cool.
You see, that's my singing voice.
Oh, that was your singing voice.
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah. And where we help small disadvantaged businesses get into the world of IT supply, and then we marry them with large technology primes and then make great outcomes for enterprise and government clients. So using that tier two contracting method in order to make things happen.
Very cool.
That's me. But this is the first time ever where we've had this type of – we hit 100K. That's awesome. And then this is the first time we're doing something new. We have two trailblazers back to back.
I know.
That's the first time we've done that.
Well, figured 100th download. He's the 101. Why not we go for it, you know?
Yeah. Last week we had Jimmy Lloyd on, economic director over at the city of St. Paul. And our guest today crossed the river.
We don't say across here in Minnesota? Yes. Across the river?
He came across the river. That would be the right way to say that. Or he crossed the river.
Got it.
I went with, crossed the river.
Got it.
Yeah, not past tense. He's kind of an active, I don't know exactly how you'd change that. Somebody out there will be able to tell me what my literary terms were.
Grammatical correction.
Yes.
Yeah.
But he came across the river all the way from the city of Minneapolis. Sometimes, as much as we say we're Twin Cities, that river kind of separates what we do, right?
That's right.
I really have to find a way across the river. But no, he came all the way across from the city of Minneapolis. He's responsible for making sure compliance on projects with the city of Minneapolis. He's particularly related to the contracting of DBEs and workforce inclusivity over there at the city of Minneapolis. Wait, are we talking about goals today?
Yes.
Yes.
Compliance, not just goals. And
wait,
goals.
We're actually going to meet goals is what our goal is?
No, our goal is to talk about just goals.
Okay, and we're setting a goal to talk about goals.
The nice side of goals, I think. We'll have to talk to Johnny about that when he comes on.
Goals squared. We're setting a goal to talk about goals.
That's right.
But before I mention our guest, introduce him. I want to remind our listeners what trailblazers are. They're those individuals inside of businesses, inside of ecosystems, inside of organizations that pave the way for small and disadvantaged businesses with resources, connections, and that support the ecosystem as a whole. You know, I could probably do this. I've been, you know,
there you are.
Yeah, I'm audio technician. Does that sound better? Yes. I have been too quiet. I was wondering if that was my headphones, seeing as you messed with them, but it wasn't. It was actually audio. Audio.
Yeah, you should talk to my editor. My editor's why can't anybody raise their voice? Exactly.
Exactly. I fixed that though. I'm now at a level 10. I've now level set that level. Most of us don't know the work that us technicians or us trailblazers do behind the scenes in order to put on good pro. You only know when it, you know, it goes awry, like I just happened, right? So anyway, what we're looking forward to doing again, this further ado thing.
I know. You see how I like
you italicize that, because I literally I could hear my buddy telling me, you know, whenever somebody says without further ado, they're adoing just a little bit more. Like they don't ever just stop and like without further ado, right, and then just stop. And whatever happens, happens. No, let me introduce the City of Minneapolis's Director of Contract Compliance, the one and only, the real Johnny Burns. Welcome, Johnny Burns, to the Procurement Games.
Thank you, thank you. I don't know which voice I should use, my radio voice or just my regular voice.
Oh, I think the ooh, that's a sexy. Wait, was there a difference there? That was a sexy radio voice. I want that one. What
was that? Well, you got the radio voice where you can go WFNU right here in Frogtown.
Oh, okay. That's good. And then regular voice?
Just regular voice.
There you go. Okay. So all that right. Deep voice is just so sultry. That's why I was like, somebody's going to belt out, my name is Charlie. I thought you were going to just pick that up.
Different kind of show for that.
Oh, different kind of show. Got it. Well, thank you for joining us, Johnny. I can't wait to get this conversation going. Really, it's Jared who cannot wait to get this conversation going. But first, we have a format and script for our episodes, and sometimes we don't stay on track. We do derail.
It's been derailed already this episode.
We've been started like the first 2 minutes of the derailment. But we will do our best to keep track, because we're going to have to do some disclaimers here. Our listeners like to hear origin stories, so we kind of want to know a little bit about how Johnny became Johnny before we do the deeper dive of this conversation. So tell me about you, Johnny.
Wow. How far you want to go back?
We can take it.
Let's see. Let's just start. I came to Minnesota from Milwaukee. I went to Job Corps, so I was kind of a at-risk student, if you want to call it that. Way back when, stayed in Minnesota, got my high school diploma, got my driver's license, got married, had kids, got divorced. Let's see. And I've moved around a little bit, so I'm fast-forwarding the journey pretty far. I've worked for three different DOTs, Minnesota DOT, where I started my career. I actually started as an emergency hire receptionist, hired by Claudia Osterman back in the day. Claudia was really good to me, bringing me in, and then worked my way up. Went to Missouri DOT, worked for Arizona DOT.
Did you become a Chiefs fan?
No.
Oh, that's unfortunate.
I was a Rams fan, and a Packers fan, so yes.
Okay, we're just going to pause.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
You wanted to let that sink in that I was a Packers fan.
Yeah, I was giving the Minnesota Vikings some pause. That's why I thought I'd honor in silence.
So if I have a job after this, you know, it'll be nice.
I don't think it's going to be with the Minnesota Vikings organization, but there's hope because you're in compliance.
Well, I did help with the stadium, though. So when the stadium was built. So I've been involved in a lot of big projects here in Minnesota. The light rail, the first light rail. The Viking Stadium. I like to work behind the scenes, you know. Absolutely. So being here, even on the radio, is a lot for me. I like to let the work speak for itself. Do all the work. I've been involved with a lot of work. Mostly, my passion around the work has been around compliance, and I think a lot of what we deal with whether it be certification in MBE, WBE, or DBE programs, compliance with workforce development or workforce goals, or prevailing wage and ensuring workers get paid, has to do with the people that are doing the work. Yeah. Some agencies wait and review information. Some people gather it and wait for people to complain. At the city, we actually actively monitor our projects, which requires a lot of work, but we're able to deal with contractors and try to set things straight before the contract gets to the end, where everybody's scrambling and they want to penalize people. It's too late at that point.
Sure. And that sounds like those are the files that kind of come to your desk. Is it's too late? You should have.
Yeah. No, we try to get them way before then. So we get into an issue where hey, we noticed that the contractor's not so the, let's say it goes on a contract and they're not utilizing someone, we're reaching out to them and saying, hey, this contract's halfway done. Why haven't you contacted or utilized this firm?
Nice.
And
nice.
So we have that built in our system there. Now I just got there about 8 months ago. So as you know, I'm a little bit well-traveled. Minnesota, I just moved back to Minnesota. Actually, I lived in St. Paul on the east side for most of my life after, coming here from Milwaukee as a teenager. And then when I moved back here from Houston, I was gone for about 5 years. I moved over to Minneapolis. And it's my first time living in Minneapolis. And it's different than St. Paul.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. So I've lived in downtown St. Paul. I've lived in downtown Minneapolis, too. So
what are you most passionate about?
Probably compliance. I mean, mm-hmm. I think that workforce, prevailing wage, making sure workers get paid. I'd literally get upset when I notice contractors cheating workers out of payment. And it was so rampant in Houston. That it bothered me a lot down there. But here we have better tools to deal with it. And, I think that the taking advantage of workers, I think, has been a problem for me.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Pause for Jared here, because there's a prompt right here.
Was there?
Yeah.
Where am I? Where? What?
See?
Well.
See, I guess you don't want to, because... Yeah,
I was listening. I was all into the conversation. I was listening for points later.
Yeah.
Derailed. But, we're chatting about goals today, aren't we?
No. Well, later. Not now. Because
I was supposed to talk about myself and I went into the work.
Sorry. Derailed on this outline.
Yeah. You can tell I don't like talking about myself
That's what happens with us people who like to be in the background. We don't like talking about ourselves.
No, not at all.
Well, so then let's talk about the city. Let's talk about the work that you're doing.
Okay. So at the city, my job is director of contract compliance. This is my third time around at the city. I started there. I worked there as a compliance officer years ago, came back as the compliance manager, then assistant director, left, been over to the state, different agencies, and then came back now as the compliance director. Director Alberta Gillespie, who's the director of the office, she's great. She allows us to get things done. And my job is to ensure small businesses have an opportunity. So we set goals on contracts, approve those goals or approve the participation plans. And we monitor contracts post-award to make sure that those companies get utilized and that individuals get paid the appropriate wage on the project based on their job classification.
Can we skip the goals part?
No.
Why not?
Do you want to hear Johnny talk?
Goals.
What about goals do you want to know?
No, that's okay. Like, we have to have like 5 disclaimers before our normal one and everything. So we need to talk about the community and how the community connects to Johnny and all that part.
Gotcha.
Okay, can we continue?
So your department and how it fits into developing community. What's the work that you do inside of the department you're in?
So community development, I guess, is a piece that we probably need to work on more, considering outreach, considering talking to people so they know what's available. You know, we work with our internal partners like Public Works and Purchasing. Purchasing has a target market program, which we'll probably talk about a little bit. We haven't done much as far as go out, sit down, talk to the community. We actually just met with one of the council members and had a conversation about, once the weather gets better, sitting down in the district, different districts and having some conversation, different wards, I'm sorry, about having conversations about, what we do, how we do it, how you can reach out to us, what type of work we do, how it impacts people if they're. So we deal mostly with construction contractors, but also contractors who are bidding to the city doing design.
Actual build. Actual construction.
Yeah, and also we have maintenance agreements. We have janitorial contracts. The city, just anything that the city does that we go out for bids, there's an opportunity. Now, it may be a niche for different people. So maybe one contract comes up a year. It might be 50 contracts a year.
Sure.
But we want to let people know, I guess, eventually, and that's this year, that there's some opportunity for them.
So let's level set. You threw out a bunch of terms in there, like contractor. There's also a prime contractor. There's all kinds of scenarios that fit all of those types of areas. Mm-hmm. So what's the compliance area around primes? Like what is a prime contractor?
So a prime contractor is a contractor that actually has the direct contract with the city. So the city contracts them to do a specific job, built this apartment building, surface this street, put this sewer or water pipe in, or we need you to deliver a new software package. That's the prime contractor. So all compliance functions is directed towards prime contractors.
And you can be a small business and be a prime, right?
Of course you can.
Okay. So there's no dollar limit that says, hey, you have to be a prime if you...
As long as you meet the contract specifications and the standards.
So then what triggers a compliance area? I mean, because is there compliance around the prime, or what is the compliance factor? Where does that factor fit into your business? Because that's your job, right? You do compliance at the city.
Let me go further back. What is compliance?
Compliance is ensuring that contractors are doing what they're supposed to do under the contract.
Got it. Perfect.
And,
awesome.
And so my compliance function or role is around first setting goals. There's a threshold. Once the contract gets to $175,000 or more, we review to see, one, is there opportunities for subcontracting? And two, are there enough MBEs, WBEs to actually do work on that contract? And if there are enough, then we set goals based on whether it be an MBE goal, WBE goal, or combined goal. You know, there's a little bit in both, so we're going to put it together and let the contractor make a decision about that.
I feel like you're tapping into some market research here.
Mm, okay.
Yeah. That sounds like part of compliance sounds like market research.
Because you have to set the goal somehow, right? It just can't be a willy-nilly.
No, you can't just throw a dart at it.
My favorite friend to do the work for me, or my brother to do the pour the concrete.
Not on our contract.
Not on your contract.
Not when I'm in compliance role.
Yeah, definitely. Let me know when when that changes.
It's not going to change. That's one of my core values is personal integrity around the work, is that you can't offer me money. You can't do anything that goes against the rules. I'm a rules person.
I love it.
I think you've given us the general requirements around compliance, right? Mm-hmm. So here we're making sure that you do what you're supposed to do on the contract, and then we've analyzed that contract for whether or not a small and disadvantaged business can be a part of it. We set a goal for that. Maybe could you give us some examples of different, you mentioned a couple ones, construction, services, all that kind of, could you give us some examples of maybe some notable ones that had maybe some kind of contracting goal attached to it?
Okay, so there's a lot of street reconstruction in Minneapolis going on right now. There's also some developments going on, so multifamily housing. So a developer comes to the city, they either need a gap finance or some type of funding. They have most of the funding together, but they need either some HUD money or some city money to put in the contract. Once they put that money in, the entire project is under the compliance rules. So a $45 million, $25 million apartment, low income or fixed or mixed income facility, we'll look at it, determine what availability there is for MBEs and WBEs. We'll set a goal. Most of what we're doing right now, so the availability may be 8 or 9%. Some are a little higher, some are lower. We then set the goals. We work with the contractors, depending on the different rules. HUD has special rules around contracting. You bring the prime in, or if you do bids for the prime, then the bids have to be a certain way.
Is that Section 3 contracting rules?
Section 3 contracting rules on there too, yeah. Okay. That's separate. That's like low-income businesses. Sure. I mean, low-income people now, they switch
the
program. People, and it's workforce and contracts.
Section 3 is did. They really did. Yeah.
And they really changed it up a lot. But anyway, so then we review that contract. We get their what we call a participation plan. And once we approve that participation plan, it's set. Now, you can come in lower than the goal if you can prove that you tried to get those companies out there. We look at the list. We see who you contacted. We talk to the people who didn't bid. We try to get information that says that you actually made an effort. Now, on development jobs, we typically meet the goal. On the city streets projects is where we typically have some good faith efforts.
So there's room to improve. There's room for opportunity for small disadvantaged businesses to help the city out and meet its diversity efforts.
Yeah. If you had a company that did paving, or if you had a company that was involved with CIPP, cured in place pipe, which is a huge kind of, they use it a lot in Texas. Basically, the pipes under the street, they put a liner in there and they rebuild a pipe inside.
Our place and the backed up, and that was one of the, that's a good job right there. Yeah. I should get
make a lot of money doing that.
Paste piping.
But there's only a couple companies here that do it.
Yeah.
But the amount of money and expertise it takes to do it is really limited, not just for minorities and women, but for a lot of companies, like anybody.
Mm-hmm.
But so once we set the participation plan, then we monitor. Are you utilizing these companies? Are you utilizing them to the level that you say you were? Are you paying the workers the appropriate wages that they're supposed to make? So each different type of worker get paid a different type of different amount of money.
So how do you define that good faith effort? Because that's a pretty pretty solid in terms of smack the hand if you ain't really into good faith effort. Because I could just send you an email and call it square.
So I can no.
No?
Nah.
Come on, Johnny.
That's not good faith.
Yes,
if I send you an email. No, that's not trying. It's not trying. No, you need to.
I called. I texted.
So you have to do, it has to be multiple attempts.
Okay.
So you email originally, you go to your bidding program, I Square Foot or whatever the bidding program is. You put that out there as a notice. You notify us. You contact a woman and minority organization saying, hey, we got this bid coming up. We'd love your people to bid to us. And then you say, we looked at contractors narrowing things down. Let's say they're redoing John Ireland out here. And they come and say, hey, we know your business is like right around the corner. We sent you an advertisement. Why aren't you bidding to us? And a contractor, you know, if they get back to them, say, hey, we're too busy. We can't do that. I know it says we do curb and gutter, but it's usually in a parking lot, not on the street, so we don't have the capacity to do that. So that, to me, that's good faith.
Okay.
You know, we reached out, we tried again, and we didn't get any communication back, or we could not meet the goal.
So what's the acceptable number of tries, and what's the acceptable number of we couldn't reach them excuse for it to be acceptable?
I think it's only a couple,
yeah,
to be honest, because they give you, it's usually 10 days, so you get at least 10 days to respond to someone. About the fifth day, they're reaching back saying, where are we at? Now, most contractors in Minneapolis are doing their best to get participation. I am noticing, though, when all the agencies are bidding the contracts at the same time, the amount of availability for those small businesses decreases a lot.
Absolutely, because of capability and capacity.
Their capacity is gone. And that's great for a capacity for a small business.
Yeah,
they're working. But for us, for goal setting and goal approvals, it stinks.
Yeah.
Like, look, we wanted to set this goal. Looks like there's a lot of availability. You start going through the directory, and then you start looking at the areas of work. And
he
you
said
don't have
the directory.
And then you don't have enough businesses who are...
another thing I love, another topic I love.
If you guys have a better way to do it, then, you know, let me know. I mean, it's difficult to create a process that works for everybody. So we're transparent. We have a spreadsheet. We look at all the companies that potentially could do the work, and we say, how many women, how many minority businesses in this area? And you say, if it's not three or more for that particular work type, then you won't include it in the goal category.
Yeah.
And so then one goal is higher or lower, depends on availability. And then if we don't have enough companies out there to bid a job and we can't put a goal on it, we tell the purchasing agency, here's the vendors that we did identify that potentially could do this work. Make sure they get a copy of this bid when it gets posted.
You talked about the challenges. Is there any other ones that are, you know, like that they're having with finding DBs? Is it pre-qualification or union requirements or insurance, bonding, all those kinds of things? Are you hearing any of those issues coming up as being why a prime contractor, a general contractor might not meet a goal?
A prime, no. I think some of the MBEs or WBs who want to bid at prime as primes, especially on the RFP type contracts, the insurance requirements for some of the work is just ridiculous. I think the city has looked into that and lowered some of the requirements based on the work. Like our typical level is maybe $3 million or something like that. And then you'll look at this type of contract and say, you know what, they don't need $3 million and a performance bond and a bid bond, you know, or and a this type of liability insurance or this type of insurance. We're going to decrease that and then open it up. Now, the problem is that because the precedent has been set by not just one agency, but all the agencies with the high insurance requirements, companies have stopped looking to bid as primes anymore because they know the requirement's too high.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I was having a conversation with a small business last week. This is so ridiculous. Sometimes the insurance requirements, you know, the bonding requirement is higher than the actual value of the whole contract. Like, this is like, and like, I can't even meet it. Like, why in the world is it so high?
Yeah.
So that was one of the issues he had as being, coming in, like you said, as coming in as a prime for some of these projects.
And I know the city, and this happened before I got there. I've been there 8 months now, 9 months now, that they've taken that in consideration on contracts because we've had some conversation. And I thought, wow, they're coming into the 21st century because most agencies don't really do that at all.
Yeah, most definitely.
So what can happen due to non-compliance if a contractor doesn't do something they're supposed to do?
Okay, so there's a few different things. So so one of the challenges primes are having is that we have a requirement to provide certain data, kind of a continuation of the letting a day later. If you don't provide that information, then your bid gets rejected. Essentially gets rejected. And so you're not a viable bidder anymore.
Can happen? I want to know non-compliance.
I know the hand smacking. How does that go?
So since I've been there, we've actually fined a contractor's $10,000, I think, 3 times in 8 months. It's probably been done not as many times in before I got there. But the issue is if you have a MBE or WB that's on your participation plan, those companies are expecting to be utilized, right?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Hey, I got this contract, and it's going to come up probably in 6 months or something, but I'm ready for it. And you decide as a company that either you forgot that you had them on your list, you chose to just do the work yourself.
How do you forget?
Well, it's sometimes sub-tier. So you have, as a prime, your sub-tier is bringing in your MBE participation.
So you're tier two.
Yeah, or tier three, the MBE even, or DBs, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But your tier two never utilized that MBE or WBE. Well, the prime's going to get penalized because he's got the contract with the city.
That's true.
So if you don't utilize those companies and you haven't requested to reduce, substitute, or just kind of remove them from the contract, then you're going to get penalized for that. And that penalty can be up to $10,000 per incident.
Nice. And so 3 contractors have been hit $10,000 each. And so what happens after they get hit? Then they just got to pay out.
We watch them. I think there's a piece in the ordinance that says if their if this happens frequently, then you can seek debarment or something like that.
Awesome.
But most contractors, you don't have to worry about. When you hit them with that, you're not getting $10,000 from your retainers. They're like, whose butt am I taking this out?
That's true.
Before we shift gears just a little bit, we've been so off on our format, we're going to flip roles about who reads the disclaimer today.
And the reason why is because this is Jared's favorite topic, and I feel like we have to protect the station from Jared because of what we're about to go into. So WFNU is a volunteer-run station made up of many different community voices, and each program expresses one aspect of this diversity and not the view of WFNU or FTI as a whole.
Wow. Public service announcement.
That's a public service announcement. And no, we're not going to jump into that because we need to make sure that once we have this disclaimer, we can enter into this topic. Okay, uh-oh. Johnny.
Uh-oh. Is this where goals come up?
Yeah. Soon. Okay. Soon. Give me a second. Right. Depends on how fast Johnny wants to answer and how he wants to jump into this. Okay, you've been in the ecosystem for a bit. And because of the various roles you played at MnDOT, Met Council, now the city of Minneapolis, understand the struggles of small businesses. And it's not just and understand them. You've actually talked to them and, tried to help them, kind of get over this. So let's understand it from an agency standpoint. What have been the challenges for small businesses?
So one of the challenges that we see is availability, first of all, of MBEs and WBEs to get on contracts or to participate, not getting back to vendors. If you're not going to bid a job and you receive the advertisement, tell a person, hey, thank you for sending this. We just we can't do it right now.
Sure.
Now, that's tougher for some businesses where the owner is the payroll person, is the HR person, and sometimes is the contracting person. So we understand that. But at best, the advice would be to do your best to reach back to those primes and say, we received this, but otherwise the prime's going to think, hey, we've been sending this to this person. We've been calling these people. They don't call us back. And sometimes, so the quality of the good faith efforts, and we'll talk about that, is important too. You're not asking a fencing contractor to bid on a job that doesn't have fencing.
That's right.
And it used to happen all the time. So people just stop looking at the 85 faxes they get a week and start dumping them in the trash because one of those opportunities is in there for them, but they don't have time to look through 85 bids to find one.
So this is where it comes in, right? So you're expecting the small business to say yes or no.
Mm-hmm.
But when I get those invitations, case in point, this morning I got invited to put on a bid for a demo. You know, I know I do construction. Right? So here's what I replied on my, and this is what I usually do to help the system out. I don't do demo work. I'm a management consultant. I help small businesses gain opportunities. Do you see that? Do you see that no comma explanation, or do you just see the yes and the no? Because to me, for compliance reasons, I want to know what other people said, because then it really shows the true effort that that contractor, that prime did. Because most just take the list and blast it out to the 1,000 plus DBE firms in the MINUCP directory, because obviously that's what happened to me. I got one for demo.
Mm-hmm. I love how I'm in technology and I get paving questions all the time.
Absolutely.
Here, I need to do asphalt. I need somebody to do concrete. No.
If you get that on a city of Minneapolis contract, call me.
Okay.
Because that's not
quality
good faith.
I would want you to see that this contract, but we don't know that they roll that up, right? Mm-hmm. They're just going to check the no box, mm-hmm, and not really explain, you know, that they reached out to a management consultant in an IT firm.
Right.
Right.
And that's ridiculous, to be honest. We actually send a list out, and we're going to stop doing this because I have a
person. They get lazy?
Get lazy. There's no creativity anymore.
That's
we sent you a list. You contact all the people. You do everything you're supposed to do, but there was probably something else on that job that you know was available, and you chose not to do it because we didn't put it on the list.
That's right.
So the problem is if you don't submit a list or you give them a list, if you don't give them a list, then they're like, what do I do?
But state and federal, I'm sorry, state and city, municipal, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're okay putting in their contracts, hey, go look at the DBE directory,
mm-hmm,
right? And mm-hmm, so that's because that is the Bible. That is the you know, the golden directory, mm-hmm, and everybody in there is, yeah.
Except for with Minneapolis, and one more step is that primes can only utilize companies in a 16-county metropolitan area. So DBE certifies for the United States, but to utilize to meet a goal on a city project, only those companies in the metro area.
And that's where the target market program comes in, TMP.
And also the disparity study said that's our market.
That 2017 disparity study?
Yeah, we're working on that.
Yeah, we're working. What year is it now? 23?
It's good for 6 years.
18, 19, 20, 21, 20. So that's why there's a massive rush. Because it's now on its sixth year. Is somebody going to look behind the Iron Curtain and see how successful those that participated? There was a handful of cities and counties in there.
Yeah, that's above my pay grade.
Okay.
I don't do disparity studies. I've been involved in disparity studies, but I don't do them.
All right, we're going to table that one. So through your lenses, what is lacking and not working in the ecosystem industry?
What's lacking?
Yeah.
I think one thing that we probably haven't discussed and I'll be honest about is the discrimination aspect, you know, whether it be discrimination toward minorities or discrimination towards women, that's still there.
Are you sure it's not just overused, Johnny?
No, that's real.
Okay.
Because I can tell you in Minneapolis that our study from 17, and I've been involved with MnDOT study, Arizona study, a couple MnDOT studies, city study, minorities and women have faced discrimination on contracts. I mean, I think it's something that's been out there so much all over the United States that it's not even worth kind of asking anymore. The question is, how do you deal with it? How do we get small businesses to give them access to capital, to not be turned down for loans, to have the capacity to, or the need to build capacity without stretching what they can and can't do. So some of the issues we're having, access to capital, then there's the kind of the misnomer about union or non-union, then there's the ability for contractors to actually bid as primes or to increase, to move forward.
Our neighbors being loud?
Yeah, I think our neighbors are being loud because we can hear some echoes.
That was weird. Sorry about that, everybody. Okay. We're all looking at each other like, what is going on? There's something, some audio playing over the top of us right now.
So I want to talk about a challenge in the industry that is almost often commented on, but not really, like, I don't know if really anything's going to change, kind of just accepted. Pay applications. And how small businesses get paid. And we know that if I did the work in December and I hand it over to my prime, the prime, you know, takes, you know, maybe 5 days to process this payment. And now I'm 35 days behind since I last started this job and submits it to the agency, to the city of Minneapolis. The 25th day, which is now technically about 75 to 90 days for the small business since the project started, the city questions that invoice and kicks it back. And now the cycle starts once again. So now here I am as a small business and don't really want to ruin my relationship with my prime. And I'm not going to file that performance or that payment bond because that doesn't really protect me, but I'm required to have it. And then 90 days, 3 months, and I still haven't gotten paid. I don't want to ruin my relationship with my prime, submitted this with, and the city kicked everything back. Does the city do partial payments?
That I do not know, but I shouldn't do know. They? I mean, I think they should, but I've worked in, I don't know how many agencies now, in four states, I think. It's the same everywhere.
I know.
So when I was in Houston, it's almost worse because the county and the city have different pay apps, and we worked on housing projects. And so the pay apps were different for the city and the county. And the county had to go to the commissioner's court for approval. But the problem is if one business didn't submit their information correctly, the whole...
That's right.
Got kicked back.
The whole package gets kicked back.
But the small businesses start complaining enough that the county said, well, if you need to remove that particular company off the pay app and just move the rest forward.
Yeah.
And as we talked about when I first started talking, is that the access to capital is an issue, especially for government projects. Because if you get on a government project, you can expect not to get paid for at least
3 to 4 months.
Yeah. I would say 45 days,
but you could say
3 to 4 months.
Right.
But if you don't have enough money to pay that payroll weekly and to cover your business expenses for the 45 days, or in your case, the 3 to 4 months, you're not going to bother dealing with the government. So can government do partial pay apps? I guess it's going to depend on the funding source and what the rules around the funding is. I know there are some specific rules at the state about how payments are being made, but it's something that needs to be talked about on a level. I do know there are prime contractors that will pay your lower tier MBEs and WBs even if they don't get paid.
Absolutely.
To keep those companies working on a project. And that we look at as a good faith effort. That's one of those real tangible good faith efforts.
Well, and then if you really think about it, those that do that, you know, it counters the argument that our small businesses have that they're just waiting for me to go out of business so that they don't have to pay me.
Right.
And that's a big, whether it's, there's probably some truth to it, right? Because somebody has proven that to happen. Mm-hmm. But we don't need to continue that story to have that conversation, right?
And I don't want to add to that, but I can tell you directly when I was at the city in 2008 to 2012, we had a contractor, I won't name names, and they were redoing one of the ramps over there. And they were, the owner of the company had just, he had a lot of cash. He was not even submitting pay apps. So the law says that you get paid 10 days after the contractor gets paid. Well, he never requested payment.
Yeah.
So he essentially was running every company off the project, not just MBEs and WBs, but they're affected first because of capital. He's running them off the project. He could do the work himself. I mean, I don't think he's in business anymore, but it was something that we had to try to address. How do we get these contractors their money? And can we start putting in the the contract that you're required to put in a pay app every 30 days on the contract.
We're going to talk about workforce requirement at the tail end of the conversation because I'm going to let Jared have at it and talk about goals.
Okay. So we talk about goals?
We can talk about goals. Okay. Go ahead. All you.
So contract goals are aspirational, mm-hmm. right? We tend to – this is our intent to provide equity inside of our contracting process. Mm-hmm. So how does compliancy play a factor into making that happen? Or what does it do? What's the goal?
So in the initial stages, it's setting the goal, of course, determining availability, making the goals reasonable for a contractor. You're just not saying, okay, this project's $5 million. We should be able to get 25% on this. You don't do that. You got to say, what are the areas on the contract? What are the availability of companies that we have? Now, availability meaning what we can find in the directory. And then from kind of the experience, kind of from the experience that we have, we may know that, let's say Lynn's company has gotten about $3 million this year so far. We really recognize her capacity about 2.5. We may not want to consider putting her in this goal. Now, we haven't done that
as
much.
I've not gotten 2.5.
I'm using you as an example. So, yeah.
But, in my other life.
But, yeah, it's one of those things where you have to determine if there's availability there. Now, on the backside of it, like I said, we set your program in place. You're using these companies for these amounts. You're going to use those companies for those amounts. Because as a condition of award of the contract, you've told us that you're going to use these companies at these amounts. Now, if something changes, that's why we have this process for substitution or deviation, as we call it. You're deviating from your original plan. Then you can do that. But we have to review that deviation, too, to make sure. Did Lynn know they were going to take her off the contract? Did she request to be removed because of it took too long? Yeah, and something happened, like maybe the contract got spread out for time. They had some award issues. You thought it was going to be available in August. The project doesn't start till December. You can't see it through. You sent them a letter, said thanks, but no thanks. I can't do it. We still make them go back and try to replace the participation that's lost. It doesn't have to be in the same area, but a lot of times by that time, the whole contract is already, they already got all their subcontractors in place by that time.
So does the city have, when you submit the bid, you disclose who your DBEs and MBEs are right from get?
Yes.
Okay. And then are they just in a list, or is there intent to use intentional language that actually says this is the intent, we intend to get a contract, this is what that DBE is going to get or MBE, WBE is going to get, and it's so stated.
That's the LOI that comes the 24 hours after bid.
So it's after bid, not yep. at the very beginning.
At the bid, you say, hey, we're going to put these
companies Lynn's going to be on this list.
Yeah, and then after, which is a continuation basically of the bid process, is okay, provide the documentation of proof.
Perfect.
Because you can't just say you're going to use somebody and you never contact them.
I solemnly swear I'm going to lose weight, but I'm not going to eat surrender chocolate and fried chicken. All right.
All right. So we're talking in the city realm right now, right? And the city's purchasing way. But you've also talked about how the city receives federal funds for projects. So when we think of transitioning that to a federal program like the DBE program, before you answer this, listeners, you can Google the DBE program from the USDOT and you can learn about it, right? It's written there, but this is what they use in order to commit goals, commit dollars to projects to, say, the city of Minneapolis. So what was that DBE program originally designed to do?
So I'm going to tell you, and this is kind of a disclaimer, and it's not really a cop-out, but all of
this
our...
This is Johnny's words.
Yes, all of our...
It has no representation of the DBE program or the city of Minneapolis or Frogtown tuned in as a whole. Right. Or Perkiovic Games.
Exactly.
And all it's his thought and his thought alone.
Yeah. But actually, the all of our DBE money, we've delegated the authority. It's kind of an authority agreement with MnDOT.
Yeah.
To deal with all of those contracts.
Got it.
So the city lets the contract for award, but MnDOT monitors and all of that stuff on those contracts. So we only get DB money through there. Now, we do get HUD money, which is a federal contract, which has the Section 3 employment stuff on it. And we monitor those like we monitor the rest of our contracts.
Sure.
And those are two different federal
dollars.
Federal dollar programs that have disadvantaged business workforce or something or some contractor.
So we don't have to. We are a certifying agency under the DBE program. So we have my staff who certifies companies in that program. We participate in the Minnesota Unified Certification Program. But when it comes to goals and compliance with DBE program rules, those projects, most of those are roads and street projects, are delegated to the state, back to the state.
So are you guaranteed to get a project if you're a DBE?
No.
No.
No, not even close.
And then just because you're in the DBE directory, does it mean that you are vetted, ready, willing, and able to perform?
That is a loaded question. under the program, when you certify somebody, you're certifying a business that is in business, technically ready to do the work. Now, the capacity and the volume of the work they're trying to do is what really is the capture. So you may have a company that says, I am technically ready, willing, and able to do dirt removal or excavation. And a contractor calls you and says, I have a $2 million excavation job. And you're like, no, I got five guys with shovels and we can dig out a parking lot, but we're not doing a $5 million project. So
the quandary right there.
Yeah, that is a quandary. Like, what's the volume of work someone can do? So there's no guarantee that you get work. The only thing I think the DBE program does that, I won't say the only thing, one of the main things is, one, it's free marketing. And now you're on a list of when companies that are, and cities, when we're setting goals, you show up in those categories for your work. So your description of work has to be really good in a directory. And then you're available to those companies to contact now to try to get contracts. But just like a job, if you're looking for a job, you know, unless you're like Lynn or something, people don't show up at your doorstep saying, here's a job. You know, you got to go out and knock on people's door and say, hey, you got a job posted. I'd like to interview for that position. It's the same way with contracting. You see a job out there or a contract you want, you got to go out and talk to people and say, I want to get it. Mm-hmm. And the DBE program, in a sense, sometimes has made people lazy in a way, saying, hey, I'm in a directory, I should get work, or makes it where they think, or maybe the people who are certifying them don't tell them. Yeah, there's a sense of entitlement. Now, I'm not saying it's with all businesses, and it's probably a small few that do, but the companies that are in the program, it's another tool in the tool belt to go after contracts, is what it should be.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. That's absolutely.
And in your stint with all the agencies you've been with, in general, are goals being met using the DBE program?
That's loaded. That's another one. Like,
simple yes or no, Johnny.
No, they're not.
Okay.
No, they're not. I think the capital intensity of highway construction is just difficult for minority companies to get into, especially when you still have discrimination in the lending institutions. So it's a whole system that trickles down. And so even though you may want to do that work, you can't get a loan for a paver. You can't get enough money built up to do a job hold a job for 45 days or 3 months. Like Lynn said, you don't have that kind of cash available to do that work.
But it's been proven time and time again, Johnny, that non-minorities get 94% to 96% of the contracts compared to their minority counterparts in the DBE program.
We don't see that at the city. Now, I've seen the opposite, though.
Yeah.
So in Minnesota, maybe that's the case. At the city, it's about 8-9%, like 8% minority, 9% women is what we've seen on our contract. So it's a pretty good balance because they're both being discriminated against. Right. Now, when I was in the South, minorities got more contracts than women.
Right, right.
And so in Arizona and in Missouri, and Houston actually too. Houston, of course, Houston.
Well, but even Arizona, if you think about it, yeah.
But minorities got more work than women did in those organizations, and minority contractors there had access to capital, like huge contractors. Right. So, but you'd have like three minority contractors bidding as primes, getting work competing against your majority primes, and those numbers counting towards the DBE goal.
So what are the city's goals?
I think it's 8 and 9.
8 and 9. So are the goals separated in workforce as well as contracting?
Different goals, but yes, separated, yep.
So minorities have their own column for workforce goals, and then women have it. I think that's the norm for the most part. Mm-hmm. So in contracting with the city of Minneapolis, minorities get their own column, and then women get their own column. Phenomenal. I love that. And are there triggers in terms of what that goal is, or do you just kind of go on the market research calculation that you shared with us earlier?
Yeah, so you have the overall aspirational goal. low, then you have what's available on contracts. Some contracts, more minority availability. Some contracts, more women. Some you have to combine because there's only a little bit of both. And we're actually compiling those numbers now to what did it look like. And on all the projects we closed out in 2022.
Cool. All right, we got some. I know we got some more here, but you got your last two questions on goals. Rock it out.
The question I had, you know, when we look at goals on projects, are they a hindrance for procurement, for compliance? What do you think on goals?
Nah, not for me. I mean,
what's not for you, Jack?
Now, contractors might see that, but I've been doing this for a long. I stay in this work because I believe in making sure that minority and women contractors get an opportunity to do work. So setting goals on, if I could set them high, I would set them high. But reasonably, you want to set them so you don't have a bunch of work on the back end trying to prove that they made good faith efforts when you just really want them to meet the goal up front in the first place. So we don't set them too low where it's, okay, this is easily achievable. We just use one company here and there. We make them realistic based on the availability, and then you handle compliance with it. And that's maybe where I differ from some people. It's never a hindrance for me. I actually enjoy monitoring and enforcing from pre-bid stages all the way through to contract closure.
But the difference there is you have two, you know, you have separated the columns of minority and women in contracting, which most agencies do not. They just get clumped together. And so the non-minority counterparts just want that to keep going up because, hey, they get more opportunities and their side can be met. But the fact that you're separating it and giving each one 8% and 9%, that's, you know, that's a hefty goal for one project. Mm-hmm. And I can appreciate that the city of Minneapolis is doing that. So couple of minutes here. I want to talk about workforce. What are your best guidance and advice for small businesses to build their own workforce? What can they do? And then by way of compliance, what should be, as a contractor, as an entrepreneur, what should I pay attention to if I am pursuing a contract with the city? So workforce compliance, what are your best practices? And for a small business in contracting, what should be my best practices? Because I'm sure at some point in time when I get big enough, I don't want to get hit with a $10,000 fine. What should I do?
So there's a whole issue around the availability of skilled workforce. So one of the things is you could join a union. The union requires you to have a different bond for making sure the worker's going to get their money. You bid in the jobs for prevailing wage anyway. That the states require. So I think the benefits of joining a union are there. You don't want to join a union, you don't have to.
It has to be a strategic decision, in my opinion. Yeah.
Now, if you don't want to join, you can still have an apprenticeship program and build your own workforce.
So you don't have to be a union to have an apprenticeship program?
No, you don't, no.
So that is such a big misnomer for a lot of our small businesses. Yeah. Is that just like nobody's talking about that?
No, I think that when I was out, I was a director of labor standards and apprenticeship for the state for a while. We used to talk about that all the time.
Yeah.
The problem is that small businesses or businesses that are not part of a union don't want to take the time to train people, but at the same time you want to complain that the schools aren't putting enough skilled workers out.
Sure.
So you can't have it both ways.
Right.
So if you notice the state agencies, Met Council being a prime example, a good friend of mine, Aaron Koski over there at the Met Council, they're working on building your own.
They are.
You know, they've had a tough time finding people. So hey, we're gonna train our own, build our own workforce. Companies can do the same thing. So the challenge is workforce, finding people able to do the job and then have them being trained enough to do it. And also recognizing that just because maybe you know how to paint or you know how to lay floors, that you can go in a room and just look and say, this is how much it's going to cost.
That's right.
Did you know there's a prevailing wage? What's your overhead attached to that? All of that, understanding how to bid a project, is super important for companies when they're trying to do work with government. So, and then having the workforce to do that. So that's a big challenge.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We can talk about this topic all day.
No, I don't think so.
No, you can't. You don't think so? But we got to wrap up.
I can, though.
I know you can. But we can talk about this because there's so much about workforce. Mm-hmm. There's so much that small businesses can do in designing theirs. There's affirmative action, following prevailing wage, and all of those things. That's just back of the house stuff that a lot of our small businesses don't know how to do and can get support from the city because there's all sorts of different programs.
Yes, our BTAP program is really good at that. And then the Target Market program, which we didn't talk about, all those contracts under $175,000, get on the Target Market list. They will contact you if there's an availability for your work. They only have to get some, depending on the contract amount, they can get verbal bids from
you. That's right.
And others, they get a smaller bid, and you're bidding against only small related businesses. similar to your size.
Well, Johnny, thank you for keeping it real.
Yeah, all day, every day.
I know. And sharing your thoughts of the ecosystem of procurement goals and compliance, I'm going to have to say you can have all the goals and all the compliance stuff.
Goals.
Definitely not my jam, and I know it's not Jared's. So what's your final thoughts, Jared? And let's close this out.
You know, it was great to chat with you today. The smile, the effort is infectious. We appreciate the insights that you have about the city of Minneapolis. 8 months in, we're looking forward to seeing what else you can do with the city. We appreciate that.
I want to keep track of this hand smacking, the $10,000. Yeah. That's my personal goal. Folks, we do have champions in our midst. We may not hear from them often, but know they are creating and influencing so that you can win in this not-so-level playing field. Without a doubt, compliance is a hot topic, and we thought by bringing in someone who lives and breathes it would shed some light on you so that you can successfully navigate procurement world and have the background to understand how things operate. Johnny, thanks once again for joining us today and sharing yourself and your organization with our listeners. Let me close with this. We always talk about that low-hanging fruit, and we have to realize to look up at the whole tree. It is filled with fruit getting ready to ripen. Learn more, get involved, don't give up, collaborate, and understand compliance because it will make or break you. I know we can do bad and good on our own, but we can do more together than we can do ourselves. Until next time, Jared and Lynn out. We'll be right back.